temperature plays a very, very critical role for lithium-ion batteries. That's why it's very important to manage a battery thermally, very much like humans. You want it to keep it in the perfect temperature, not too cold, not too hot.
Okay, think for a second about all the small electronic devices in your home. Yeah, I know there's the phone and the tablet and the laptop, probably several of each. There's also the smoke detectors, remote controls, maybe a toothbrush or two. If you have kids or are a kid at heart, maybe you have some buzzing or talking games or toys. You might even have a portable radio. People still listen to those, right? Can you get a podcast on that thing? Or even a wristwatch? And the one thing that ties all these devices together? Batteries. The kind of batteries you buy in bulk at convenience stores and then shove in a drawer until you need them. The junk drawer. These days, you don't have to dive into that junk drawer near as often. That's because a lot more devices come with rechargeable batteries of their own. And battery technology is one of the big topics in mobility today, including when it comes to autonomous vehicles, which often are power hogs. Some of today's prototype autonomous systems, they consume up to 4 kilowatts of electricity. That's like having 100 laptops running in your trunk continuously. So, as you might imagine, there are a whole bunch of engineering problems to solve. The biggest one is range anxiety. Does this car have enough juice to get me to work? But there are lots more besides.
My next car is going to be electric for sure.
This is Puneet Sinha. He's worked around batteries and other alternatives to internal combustion engines for a decade. He focuses on heat and thermal analysis, which are big deals beyond batteries too, especially for all the sensors that are the eyes and ears of autonomous vehicles. He wrote a paper earlier this year, we'll put it in the show notes, on thermal design challenges for LiDAR. LiDAR are the sensors that give 360-degree visibility around the car and measure distances down to a few centimeters. They're the spinning boxes you've seen on top of prototype vehicles today. Puneet's an automotive manager in Mentor's mechanical analysis division. Before his time at Mentor, he did a stint with one of the bigger names in the auto industry, one that has electric vehicles on the road today, in fact.
I had a chance to work at GM, at the GM fuel cells facility, which was in upstate New York. It was one of the great starting point. Anyone can ever have the kind of team and the kind of work I had a chance to do. So it was exciting to work on pretty much at the bleeding edge of where the technology was going for hydrogen fuel cells. And that time, 2008-2010 time frame, was also the time when EVs were just coming around, you know, the second wave with the Tesla Roadster.
Just a note here for those out there who are not car or tech fanatics like most of us here at Siemens PLM, EVs is short for electric vehicles. You'll also see acronyms like PHEV, plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, and BEV, battery electric vehicles.
GM invested in Chevy Volt. Chevy Volt came around. So my facility within GM, my lab was specializing in electrochemical engineering, which is both fuel cells and batteries. So my work spanned from fuel cell and expanded in lithium-ion batteries, and I had a chance to, again, work on some of the lithium-ion battery-related programs within GM, Chevy Volt and other vehicles, and also working with suppliers.
So just real quick, I'm curious, because you're just passing attention to news about our post-internal combustion future. For a long time, it feels like fuel cell technology has been like on the horizon forever. It's like soccer in America. It's like it's going to be here, and just if we could just wait 5 more years, where is that? How is that going to fit into the future of how we power vehicles as you see it?
Yeah, so it's true. I think the fuel cells future have gone through a significant up and down, you know, and it has been, in my opinion, has been a case of too much promise followed by too much dejection around it. You know, if you look at the activities in the marketplace and the investment area right now, fuel cells is going to have a future.
Fuel cells are fun to talk about, even if they're not front and center today. You know, all that comes from the tailpipe is water, clean enough to drink, at least according to YouTube. I lived in California when Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor and drove around in a hydrogen-powered Hummer H2. We'll probably have to continue to wait for this one. Maybe it's a sign of the times, Schwarzenegger now drives an electric Mercedes-Benz G-Class SUV. Turns out there's still quite a few challenges to solve with fuel cells.
There are two big challenges with fuel cells, especially for if you think through for the automotive industry. One is the hydrogen infrastructure, refueling infrastructure. It's easy to refuel hydrogen, but the fact that hydrogen is the lightest element, it's not energy efficient to pump or transport hydrogen around. And the other aspect is cost. So these are still big challenges, there has been enough analysis, and I believe that fuel cells will play a role in future, especially for some of the heavy duty vehicles. I think that they have some unique value propositions, fast refueling, and as well as with the fact that if you have to increase the range with fuel cell technology, you have to put just a bigger tank of hydrogen, whereas in battery, you have to if you have to increase range with battery, you have to put more cells, which is a lot more heavier and take more volume. So especially for heavy duty vehicles, also for mission critical application, defense may be one of such examples. I think fuel cells has a role to play, but I think in the commercial space for the passenger cars, looks like battery is going to be around for a lot longer. I don't see right now how fuel cells can make a big dent in the passenger vehicle market. We already have many computers, hundreds of computers in our cars, and that number and the complexity of those electronics is going to only grow. So Mentor, being a EDA leader in the world, was ideally suited to lead the new wave of automotive era. And that was number one thing that drove me to Mentor and explore not just the electronics, but how electronics and mechanical world needs to come together. I think that's where the challenge is how the EDA world and the traditional automotive industry have to come together and develop, whether solve the challenges related with autonomous vehicle or electrification. And that's truly exciting to me. And I'm fortunate that I'm able to work at that interface. And that interface, I think is and it has been mentioned, is the key reason why Mentor and Siemens have joined hand. And then at that interface, bringing the EDA connect and mechanical world together to help address challenges for autonomous and electric vehicle. That's where I'm working these days.
Part of Puneet's job is to focus on thermal analysis. If you're not an engineer, at first listen, you may think this is about how hot it gets in the car or how well it can function in different temperature environments. That's actually part of it. You probably know, for example, that electric vehicles don't necessarily love cold and snowy climates, but it's more than that too. All those vehicle sensors, LiDAR and otherwise, they can run quite hot, especially as they get more powerful. Plus, automakers are exploring integrating sensors all around the vehicle, in side bumpers, the front grille, headlights or taillights, so the sensors themselves need to be able to function in extreme all-weather environments. This is something entirely different than seat warmers and air conditioning. Anyway, I asked Puneet to talk about thermal analysis and why it matters in autonomy.
Thermal is important for all aspects of vehicles. So let's take just the two biggest ones. Let's start with battery. So battery is an electrochemical energy conversion unit. What it does, there's electrochemical reaction that happens in the battery, and that creates electricity. But when this reaction happens, the heat is generated, and as the temperature goes up, for the reaction rate also increases. So that means the reaction means more heat, and more heat means more reaction. So there is a positive feedback loop between the reaction rate and temperature in a battery. So that's why it is very important to account for temperature when you are whether designing cell or looking at this operation or life or safety. And I always say batteries are like humans. They don't like very, very cold weather. They don't like very hot. And also, of course, if batteries, they have so much of energy, the energy density is so high for lithium-ion battery that if temperature keeps going up after a critical value, critical temperature, the reactions, there are a lot more self-sustaining reaction that starts happening that leads to thermal runaway, which are the safety events. So safety is important for perform, first and foremost for safety, to make sure no bad event happen. But in also to make sure that you get the performance you want, and you get the performance for 10 years or 8 years that you're trying to get. And for all these aspects, performance, life, and safety, temperature plays a very, very critical role for lithium-ion batteries. That's why it's very important to manage a battery thermally, very much like humans. You want it to keep it in the perfect temperature, not too cold, not too hot. In same way, if you look at power electronics, which is again going to take an electricity from battery and convert it to AC, that it can go to electric motor and drive the vehicle. For its life, temperature is the biggest indicator. So, and in the same way for motor, temperature plays a big role in the life of motors. So for the whole electric powertrain, temperature is a key factor to ensure you get the performance without sacrificing your life or safety. But the other aspect is also very important, which, as I said earlier, that cars are becoming more and more electronics. And for electronics, any electronics, temperature is the number one leading factor for its life. So when you are designing any electronics, let's in this discussion, if you are whether look at ECU or even infotainment system, or even for autonomous vehicle, whether you are looking at sensors or onboard computers, you need to design it in a way that the system temperature, especially the junction temperature, where the semiconductor, which is very critical for semiconductors, that is designed right. And of course, you don't want to over design, because then the volume and is too much, and so you want to minimize volume, minimize bulk, but you still need to design it right. And you cannot think of temperature as an after effect. You have to account for temperature from the beginning, from the stage you are designing electronics, you are designing the layout of your PCB board, to optimize the life and performance of electronics. So that's why temperature is critical for electric and autonomous vehicles.
This doesn't come as a surprise. From past conversations on this podcast about different aspects of autonomous vehicle development, safety's come up time and time again. It's at the forefront in most discussions, and for obvious reasons. Thing is, self-driving technology ultimately should make us a lot safer, but all the technology, chips and the software, networks and electrical systems, and yes, whatever fuel alternatives that will power these vehicles, this all introduces new safety issues too. So engineering teams will have to continue to adapt and improve with an eye on safety.
I have seen tremendous changes in design flows, the way companies or whether it's on the automakers or suppliers are going after designing safe technology. For example, if you are just looking at for the battery technology, developing safe batteries is more than just having a good chemistry, because it involves design from a very micro level, which is at the micro level particle that goes inside that is part of the material inside the battery, to the whole battery pack, which may have hundreds or even thousands of cells, and managing them electrically, thermally. So you can think it's from micron level to almost meter level problem. So it's So it's a very multidimensional problem. And what has happened? What I have seen, I think a big role. Softwares have played a big role in tying everything together, because also supply chain is very different. Automakers are not necessarily invested in developing the material, and the companies who are developing materials for lithium-ion batteries are not the one who have may not have the full view of how the battery packs are being put together. How will you cool them? How will you manage them? So software is essentially, we think of it or we call it a digital thread, which connects the whole from material to the whole pack. And that has done a tremendous advancement. That has led a tremendous advancement of how companies are approaching developing safe batteries. And not just safe, but also making sure that your performance, life, and safety, this triangle is met, that the metrics are met.
Each guest gets a series of rapid-fire questions at the end of the interview. There are lots of ways to power us through a transportation day, maybe a gasoline car in your driveway for errands and commuting, hopping in a hybrid rideshare vehicle for your night out on the town. There's biodiesel and electric buses in my hometown of Portland, Oregon. And I've been living in Fujisawa, Japan for a year, and I've spent a lot of time on foot and on my bicycle and, of course, on the trains, which are awesome in Japan. Anyway, this is a kind of quick multimodal part of the podcast, a different way to get to know the guests. Here are Praneet's answers. Off the top of your head only. No grading. This, yeah, this is no right answer. So question number one, what is your favorite go-to source of information for what's going on with electric autonomous vehicles?
The Charge TV magazine for electric vehicle, autonomous vehicle technology magazine for autonomous, and the best source is Google News. You know, I'm always hooked onto that.
And of course, the Mentor Automotive blog.
Absolutely. That goes without saying.
Number two, what advice do you have for someone who might want to get into the automotive systems engineering world and maybe do work on either EVs or autonomous vehicles or smart city applications? But to get into the field today, what advice would you give to somebody who's in college, say, right now?
It's a truly exciting times to be part of vehicle electrification revolution or autonomous vehicle technology revolution. My personal advice to the students in school or in college is that master one technology, whichever field you are in, if you're a chemical engineer, mechanical engineer, controls, but be curious and look at the connection, because no one discipline work alone in a vehicle or in a system. So it's very important to, of course, understand your particular discipline, whether it can be thermal or electronics or controls, but it is very important to understand the connectivity and get a system level view working with different companies, internships, they are great ways to understand, appreciate the complex interactions among different systems. And once students understand and appreciate that, that makes it truly exciting.
Number three, what is the biggest technical problem standing in the way of, I mean, assuming we're going to get to eventually level four, level five, electric autonomous vehicles, what's the biggest technical hurdle in the way to that future?
Well, I think the biggest technical hurdle is trust and confidence in the technology that it is going to, especially when you're talking about level four or level five, you know, where it's level five, where you're giving the control, complete control to a machine. And there are so many, millions and billions of scenarios. So to make sure that the system is able to adjust and address and to all those permutation combination is truly challenging.
And lastly, what's the best part of your job today? You see a lot. You work across engineering and biz dev and marketing. What do you like most about your job today?
What I like the most is the fact that I get to interact both with the customer world and understand their problem, how are they looking at the world, and at the same time, I'm closely interacting with the product team. So being a kind of a link between the what we call factories or our internal development and customers is truly exciting to see, you know, sometimes very differing viewpoints or sometimes completely aligned to begin with. That makes every day exciting. And not to mention that, you know, for today, you know, talking to you.
I will send you a pizza after we wrap up.
half green pepper, half pepper, half green pepper, half pineapple.
I'm opening the TaskRabbit app right now on my phone as we speak. Well, Puneet, I know you're a busy guy. You spend a lot of time on the road, and you certainly are busy when you're in the office as well. So thanks for making time today to do the interview. I appreciate it. Our listeners appreciate it as well.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. And thanks for your time, Jeff. I enjoyed our conversation.
And just two last questions. What do you do for fun outside of work? And if do you want to plug anything that you're working on, any a particular white paper or blog or whatnot, one asset that we could point to just to wrap up?
Sure. The thing that I like to do the most outside of work is playing racquetball. That's one thing I look forward to doing every day if I can. And there's some very interesting things that I'm working on. I just wrote a blog about what will it take to build next generation of EVs. It's on Siemens Digital blog platform. And I'm also working to develop a white paper talking about battery engineering challenges, looking at why design can help solve the challenges that many times we don't think design can help with. So truly exciting and showcasing how our technology is making a difference is truly rewarding. So I like it.
A big thanks to Puneet Sinha, automotive manager in our mechanical analysis division. We have more good conversations coming up, including a chat with Marcus Welts and Priscilla Boyd of Siemens Intelligent Traffic Systems. Marcus is president and CEO of ITS, and Priscilla, who goes by Pri, is a senior product manager. Pri gave an awesome TEDx talk at Oxford on connected vehicles last year that's worth checking out. I talked to Marcus and Pri about connected cars and smart infrastructure and how that fits into all this. Turns out there's more to the future than self-driving cars. Thanks for joining us today, and for more, visit Siemens PLM Software online. Siemens PLM Software is a world-leading provider of product lifecycle management and manufacturing operations management software. We help thousands of companies realize innovation by optimizing their processes from planning and development through manufacturing, production, and support.